Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
I'm feeling like I'm keen, riding with a Caltech. voice comes back to me, and in Seville, doing the Spanish Inquisition, and so he's doing his miracles and raising people from the dead, and like being messianic, and the first thing that happens is the Inquisitor arrests him, throws him in prison, and then comes to visit him and basically says, look, the last thing we need after setting up this church for 2,000 years is you. You're in a lot of trouble. You've put a moral burden on human beings that's too much for them to bear. And so what we've done is watered it down and put some intermediaries in place so that the moral demand that your example required doesn't just crush people into nothingness, right? So every ideal is a judge, right? So then you have the ultimate ideal. That's the ultimate judge. And from the Inquisitor's point of view, that judge was too much. It was too demanding. And so, I think there's an... And so the Inquisitor goes through all this argument and says, we're going to have to, you know, get rid of you again because you're just too much to bear. And so, Christ listens and doesn't say anything. And then, just when the Inquisitor stands to leave, Christ kisses him on the lips, and the Inquisitor turns white in shock and then leaves, but he leaves the door. And that's the brilliant, ending of Dostoevsky's piece. Yeah, and what makes him such a genius, because he basically says something like, well, look, the Catholic Church didn't reduce the burden, and it is corrupt in the way that earthly organizations are likely to be corrupt, and it does allow an out, which is where you can put your sins on Christ, let's say, and that alleviates your moral burden, but it still keeps the damn door open.
Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
Alright. Well, let's get it rolling.
Mahalo, everybody. Welcome back to the Slime Wire podcast. I'm your host, Triton T2, and I'm, of course, joined by Ikeman Sensei.
Mahalo.
And this is episode 2855, baby. This is a pure vaporwave discourse round. Some heavyweight vaporwave discourse. We are over-analyzing vaporwave to the point where we no longer understand it, as some have said on Twitter. Basically, we haven't really talked about any intense vaporwave discourse since our Return of Kings episode, which was all about the vaporwave sample controversy. Is sample-based vaporwave, or is non-sample-based vaporwave? But lots has happened since then. So I'd like to start us off with the first little bit of juicy vaporwave drama that happened after that was the Mesh versus DC Dream Catalog debacle, which in itself is not very interesting, but it did bring up some good discussion points that people were making. And so basically, just the general background on this is that Mesh was not wasn't getting paid by HKE, or so he said.
He was not properly reimbursed.
Yeah, he said he was not properly reimbursed for his album on Dream Catalog, which is the Mesh Telepath Split, which is fire. Amazing album, by the way. I love that album. But and then, you know, HKE said actually he was being reimbursed, and Mesh is just sort of pulling this out of nowhere. Who knows? My main takeaway is that it's like it's very messy because that like album came out before Spotify was a thing. Nobody knew that Vaporwave was going to be making numbers on streaming platforms, you know. Nobody knew that it was ever really going to make a bunch of money. So it's like, from what I could gather, Mesh did make a tweet that was like, to all artists, make sure you like know exactly what you're getting into when you release with the label, like have a contract and everything. It sounded like that probably didn't exist for him for that album, which at the time was probably pretty normal considering it was just like a small cassette run on Dream Catalog and like not very many people even listened to that like at the time. But I'd like to hear your thoughts. I remember you saying that you saw lots of bad takes on both sides.
Point of clarification. Were the funds that he failed to receive from Dream Catalog, were those funds entirely from Spotify streams?
So, I don't know. So, like, obviously there's money that comes from physical sales.
Yeah.
Which, and according to HKU, was paid several times for that. And then what happened is in the, like, Twitter thread where he was talking about it, somebody, like, posted the stream numbers. And then, you know, people on Twitter mathematicians were like, oh, well, you should be making, somebody said $10,000 based on those streaming numbers, which I do not believe is true. There's no fucking way. And, and then Mesh was like, oh, God, you know. But,
oh, my God.
So, yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I imagine a bulk of the money now is probably streams, yeah, rather than physicals. Because they haven't done a physical precedent forever.
Yeah,
this whole thing started because people were asking Mesh if they were going to repress it. And he was like, no.
I think that, I want to say that Mesh's, like, internet presence and general personality that he puts out on Twitter is very kind of, like, I don't know, sad and weak. He's weak.
Yeah, I don't know.
it did have a very whiny tone to the kind of, like, the complaint that he was making, and the way that he phrased it had a very whiny tone, which didn't sit right with me, but I do think that, I'm coming down on the side. He should be getting reimbursed on time every time for the stuff that he's making. And people that were, there were a couple of takes that were like, well, this is just what you sign up for when you're like making experimental music, like underground music, and you shouldn't blame these labels. HKE has a family to feed, and you shouldn't expect him to get back to you right away. That's just the reality of running an underground music label.
A lot of people seem to think they know exactly how to run an underground music label.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, that excuse of being like, sorry, I can't pay you three... I'm going to go ahead and... I think his original estimate was that it was about $3,000. And so I'm going to go with that number moving forward. Based on nothing. It could have been completely wrong. I think that people being like not getting paid $3,000 for however many years just because that's what you signed up for is a bad take, and you shouldn't excuse simply because the label is underground. Simply because you're making music that is not supported by big money, Sony Records, Paramount Records, something like that, does not forgive any unprofessionalism on the part of these small labels. If anything, smaller labels should run a tighter ship, be more disciplined, because we're going up against the titans of industry.
Yeah, definitely.
So I don't think that that is much of an excuse. However,
I mean, that's not an excuse that HKE was making. It was just like, a take on Twitter.
Yeah, that was a random person's take on Twitter.
That was somebody from our Discord.
That was an HKE Dream Catalog Stan making that take. I believe that HKE came in with a more tempered response, the main point of which was, it's gauche. It's unbecoming to take this complaint to the public before you've had a chance to take it to the person you're making it against, which he said that, HKE said that it was all coming out of nowhere, he was not talked about this before Nimesh came out and aired his dirty laundry out on Twitter, which I think is a more reasonable approach. I was wondering, Yeah, I mean, I think that is especially once again because it is an underground label. Dream Catalog has been going on and off. Nobody knows if they're making any money, right? Are they making
I mean, it's assumed that HKE doesn't have a day job. Like, his career is running Dream Catalog.
Yeah, but it's over the time span that Nimesh hadn't been getting paid, which, if I remember correctly, was years. He hadn't gotten paid that money in years.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. This is dumb speculation, but yeah.
This is wild speculation, but we're engaging in it.
Yeah.
And I think that Dream Catalog has been, you know, canceled and reopened, canceled and reopened.
Yeah, shut down.
For years, yeah. Yeah.
And so several times over the course of this podcast, like the run of us even doing the show, they've like shut down and reopened like at least three times.
Yeah. So an entity that nobody can even tell if it's going to exist as a label next week. I do understand how that would be frustrating that you have a bunch of money that you're owed, but I do think that ultimately having asked HKE first would have been the way to go. I do kind of think that it was unfair of him to air that dirty laundry before they had a chance to settle it in private. But yeah, I don't know.
I agree with that. I think it's weird that out of the many, many artists that have released on DC, this is the first I've ever heard of somebody not getting paid by them. You know, you would think more than one person would have said something at this point, especially if it's, supposedly been years. But
well, it's got to be a common thing, and I think that based on the comments that I was reading about that, that is a pretty common occurrence within the vaporwave scene and within any kind of like indie underground music in general. So,
yeah, I have definitely heard from people that they haven't been paid from certain labels, and yeah, that is a thing.
So I think that's to be expected. But a figure or, you know, an artist on the level of Nimesh, I do get, and somebody whose music is comparatively in demand on the level that Nimesh's music was or is. I think that it's not worth getting up in arms about if that does happen to you, but I also do believe that underground labels and the vaporwave scene in general has a kind of an impetus or a mandate that they need to be twice as good about stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Because then you get a bad reputation, everybody gets a terrible reputation, then you know, just like the entire drama over like cassettes and records, like pre-orders not being able to be fulfilled and people waiting like 3 years to get their Death Dynamic Shroud tapes. Like, that just creates a bad reputation. That's bad for everybody.
You just picked Death's Dynamic Shroud out of a hat there. I do not believe there's any Death's Dynamic Shroud controversy.
I think there was a record. I think when they had a record press, I remember that they that's one of those, like, it was extremely popular and people bought it all up, and then they overpromised whatever, you know, tape label pressed those vinyls. They overpromised how many they were going to do, and people were waiting for, like, 6 months. I remember that being a thing. I don't know. But regardless of whether it was specifically
destined... I mean, the Floral Shop vinyl scam is obviously a big one.
Stuff of legend. Yeah.
One of the greatest, like, moments of Vaporwave.
Yeah, if Vaporwave is turning into big business, it behooves us to be on the up and up. Practice good business practices.
Yeah, well, another thing that this brought up was with that person's comment about, you know, DC being an underground label, and I think a bunch of people mistook that take as an attack on 100% Electronica for being too corporate. Or actually, maybe they didn't mistake. Maybe it wasn't a mistaken take, because I believe the end of that was like, if you want, like, professionalism, go release on 100% Electronica or something around those lines.
I see.
But yeah, and then that created another string of controversy about, is 100% Electronica corporate? Is it corporate Vaporwave? And of course, you know, 100% Electronica, to my understanding, is like 4 or 5 people, and it's like run out of a garage. So, I mean, it is a DIY venture. It is not like, you know, it's definitely not like a big music record label. I would say that they do act corporate, you know.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, is that just them being good businessmen, or is that like, I don't know, is that anything interesting? I feel like they do give off an air of like corporatism, which can be ironic in Vaporwave, but I don't think it is in that sense.
I think the more so than the actual size of whatever, the scope of whatever outfit they're operating on, is just a general willingness and striving to be, to like expand the sonic palette of Vaporwave into something that will be digestible by a popular audience, you know? So I think whether they're corporate or not now is not as important as like what their goals are and what they're trying to do, which is, I think, definitely mainstream a certain sound.
Their goal has, like, George Clanton has definitely said that the goal of 100% Electronica is to become a corporation.
Yeah, and which is, like, fine, except what is sacrificed to do that is to craft a sound which is indistinguishable from just regular old pop music.
Well, should they be, like, held to a higher standard, I would say, than a DC, or, like, not a DC, but, like, a much smaller cassette label in Vaporwave, that there, you know, there's many of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have... They're releasing huge shit, right? I mean, they're putting out the big, heavy hitters. Like, they put out that DDS... DDS is on 100% Electronica, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they're releasing...
DDS is also released on Dream Catalog.
Yeah, but that was then, this is now.
True.
And, so they're making... They're releasing shit that is getting hella plays. I'm not sure how popular George Clanton has become outside of the Vaporwave community.
I mean, he has lots of Spotify streams, for sure.
Yeah.
I would say one thing that definitely differentiates them from like other smaller labels, and you know, I mean, I guess this is speculation, but there's no way that they don't have like a publicist.
Yeah.
Is
oh yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, the professionalism of the press junkets that they send out is next.
Well, just
level.
The fact that they're recognized by you know, I mean, they did an event with Pitchfork, like, very recently.
Yeah.
they're, you know, frequently on like Fantano's radar, frequently on like Pitchfork the Fader, all of those music sites, you know, able to get venues that no other vaporwave artist would be able to get.
For sure.
Yeah. Throw festivals, things of that nature.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what the amount of money that they're working with. I imagine wouldn't surprise me if it was a Peter Thiel op, you know. But I think that I would generally, I'm not sure if I would expect most tiny little tape labels to adhere to a level of professionalism, but I think that 100% Electronica seems like that is what they're trying to do. That's what they want to be, is to be some, be corporate minted label that's gonna be able to be held to those standards. So regardless of whether they should, I think that's what they're trying to do. And I think that's, if Dreamcat and all these other smaller labels want to not even like compete, but just for the sake of the scene, that's a standard that should become normal.
One thing that's interesting about this is sort of a long-standing thing. Not that this is a beef between 100% Electronica and Dream Catalog. It's more of like a larger beef between like that side of vaporwave and this other side of, like, you know, dream punk and vaporwave. But a long time ago, this is some vaporwave lore, some vaporwave history, which I know a little bit about, is when like Dream Catalog was like at its biggest, at one point HKE went on like a drunken rant in the Vape Council vaporwave Facebook group, and then those comments were posted on the subreddit, like screenshotted and posted on the subreddit. There's a big whole controversy, and George Clanton commented on it and was like, come join 100% Electronica if you want a label that isn't gonna shit on you and call you pussies for making soft vapor. This was during the hard vapor era.
Gotcha. Very fun. Yeah, that's savage. And that's why we support Dream Catalog and we support HKE, because we want totally unhinged artists. We want people that are completely out of pocket and are going buck wild, and like, why would you not support something like that in your artistic scene? You need curmudgeonly drunk people that are angry. Like, it's not like, if you don't have that, your artistic scene is not cool. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
I
wouldn't attack 100% Electronica for being corporate as much as, I'm not attacking them per se, but like the corporate vibe is not something that I enjoy as much as I enjoy the wild, unhinged chaos vibe of Dream Catalog.
Exactly. And something that is important, and I think coming back to the music, is that, which like the music sort of supports both of these interpretations, is HKE to me can get away with this because he's prolific and the shit he puts out is really good. If he was not a good musician and he was doing these drunken rants, then that would be something else. But he is a very good musician, and so behaving in this way gets an excuse. Actually, it enhances the music. They're mutually reinforcing, to be honest. The music legitimizes the toxic behavior, and the toxic behavior enhances the music.
Yeah, it just completely
better,
agree.
Better. It's a feedback loop. And conversely, the sterilized musical stylings of your George Clantons is fitting for a corporate outfit. So ultimately, the problem that I have with, it's not the fact that the thing has gone corporate, really, it's the fact that the music is getting changed in a way that's making it indistinguishable from just regular old pop music. And I guess when I say that, I mainly mean George Clinton's music, like his recent music. I guess there's some other guys on there where they're, you know, the reason that the corporatization of it is bad is because a lot of that music just now sounds indistinguishable from normie music.
Well,
the reason it sounds like that is because they're trying to get more popular, so they're trying to concede to a lay audience.
Well, it's not even the presentation of it, like, even the, like, you know, the whole... I think that was a thing, was like, how is 100% electronica corporate when they, you know, we sell tie-dye shirts and weed grinders and we make memes, and it's like, well, your memes are, like, sterile as fuck, you know?
Yeah,
and like,
and fucking Wendy's makes memes. Wendy's is gonna be selling weed grinders in, like, 3 years, because that's the way that, like, the corporate environment is moving now to try to fucking suck millennial dicks.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is indistinguishable. Like, just because you sell tie-dye t-shirts, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? Pepsi has a tie-dye t-shirt. Like, the... That's not...
Yeah. And I'd like to reiterate that this isn't just, like... This isn't just 100% electronica bashing for the sake of 100% electronica bashing. There is, yeah, like, a... There's, like, a history and, like, a, There's, like, a linear line that you can, like, draw through the history of Vaporwave, where, like, in 2016, when, like, Dream Catalog was at its highest, and then it, like, sort of fell from grace due to... these, like, unhinged, like, Facebook rants and, like, the hard vapor and, like, people losing faith in that, like, part of Vaporwave. And then George Clanton coming in after having been gone for a long time and sort of retaking over the Vaporwave scene in a more, and taking it in a more wholesome, sterilized direction. And then you've also seen, like, just in, like, the people on Twitter, like, a lot of Vaporwave old heads were gone for years. Like, Vaporwave was sort of started by a group of people that sort of left and were sort of replaced by people like HKE, Ozcob, Wasex, and then as those people left, the Vaporwave OGs came back and sort of capitalized off of it. And so a lot of people, like, on Twitter, they really have this blind spot from, like, 2015 to, like, 2017, 2018, until George Clinton came back and brought them all back into the scene.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a Wii U situation. Nintendo put out the Wii U and everybody left, and nobody remembers that, like, that entire era. And now Switch came back, and people are hopping back on. That's a really bad metaphor for what I'm trying to say, which is that I think that what you're trying, your problem is that it's a stolen valor type thing, or it's a, there's a rightful heir. There are people who put in the work and people who abandoned Vaporwave, and now they come back and they are making these claims. Even,
yeah,
though they,
and they're, you know, it's our scene. We created it. And it's like, well, you were gone for years, man. Like,
yeah.
You know.
I guess
that's, you're right,
valid.
It is sort of a sort stolen valor thing. But I would, yeah, say that, like, the growth of the scene, the way that it got big, was on the backs of these other people, too. Like,
yeah,
I think we talked about this when we interviewed Ozcob, where, like, the whole idea of, like, a Vaporwave personality didn't really exist until Ozcob. Nobody was on Twitter. Nobody was,
yeah,
doing podcasts. And, yeah, you know, it'd be impossible to find anybody in the Vaporwave scene now. Not impossible, but, you know, it's hard to find anybody in the Vaporwave scene now that would admit that.
For sure. Yeah, that is a good point. That is a very good point. I do think that the...
And the large, like, the focus on physical releases was really started by Dream Catalog as well. And
not
that
true.
Is the... That's exactly, like, all that Vaporwave is now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I think that that's a legitimate grievance, but I for me, the true terror of this is that vaporwave will be kind of dissolved into a broader nostalgia porn music scene, which is basically just all music at this point. And any differentiation between vaporwave and everything else, I mean, I've been through this a million times. If there's nothing to differentiate vaporwave from all these other forms of music, then it's just gonna, it'll be truly gone.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it's gonna work. I think it's gonna be a good idea. And also, I don't think 100% electronica, I don't think that is gonna work out for them as well as they think it is, you know?
Well, I think it's a trend right now, and everything's cyclical. It's gonna come back around. I don't know exactly. I'm not gonna predict the trajectory of music in the next 5 years. Maybe 100% electronica will be bigger than ever. Maybe all this stuff will sort of fade away. I think vaporwave will probably still be around. I'm gonna be right back.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem. I am going to make some wild predictions, because that's what I think this episode is developing into, baseless speculation. people that are trying to get big, we've seen people try to do it. They've never been able to do it. Skylar Spence's career cratered. Crashed and burned. And that's what is going to happen to the rest of these guys. The stink of this association with vaporwave will not wash off, and they will not be taken seriously. And
also, millennials are fucking like dead. Millennial culture is dead.
Yeah, millennials don't matter anymore. They're trying to get this off the ground at the moment when millennials no longer are the youth culture, which means that music industry professionals are no longer going to be catering to them. So yeah, missed your chance. Sorry guys, I think you missed your chance. You're stuck down here with the rest of us, okay?
Yeah.
The only choice is just keep the corpse shambling along. Forever.
Yes, definitely forever.
That was the only way that it was ever cool, was that it was already obsolete a year into itself
being
cool, and it already sucked years ago, but people just keep on doing it, and that's what makes it interesting, because there's never been a genre, people just abandon artistic movements that become lame, except for vaporwave. Just keeps on going. That's what makes it completely unique.
Yeah, somehow new people keep joining.
yeah. People
and
left.
It's almost like the core amount of people never really change. It's like old people leave as new people join, you know?
For sure, yeah. I think that there is also something to be said that it's like, it's kind of we talk a lot about the low barrier of entry and the punk ethos and the outsider art ethos. It is definitely, I think, as long as there are people who can't make it in the real art world, there will be a vaporwave scene. And that's basically what vaporwave is. It's just people who couldn't hack it in the real, I don't know, maybe they weren't trying to hack it, but it's the nature of it is that it's the refuse of the art world, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You come here when you've lost everything else, when you have nowhere left to go.
Yeah, when your chillwave project didn't work out.
Exactly, and you fucking just say fuck it and put on some stupid make a stupid mixtape as a passive-aggressive fuck you to the world, to art itself. That gets famous. It becomes a huge vaporwave album. You never wanted attention in that way, and now you're stuck. And you gotta be here.
That is what happens a lot, because then people immediately try and go back and make their... That's the whole musician's brain thing, is then they go, oh, but that's not me.
I actually
make music like this, no, and it's really good. Yeah. And then, but it's like, no. Nobody liked that, you know?
You already tried that. It didn't work out. And in a way, you're getting what you deserve, because the vaporwave, the mixtape that you made by stealing other people's hard work, it was a... The impetus behind that was a feeling of resentment and anger and despair. Mm-hmm. And you put that negativity out in the world in the form of a vaporwave album, and your punishment for that is to become famous in the vaporwave scene. Right? And then you can never leave. So you got what you deserved, guys.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Classic, tragic story. That's what I predict will happen.
Okay, well, moving on, I don't want to sound too egotistical here, but I think a combination of me igniting the sample debate and then Electronicon happening right afterward sent Vaporwave into like a bit of a weird identity crisis. And like, just ever since then, it's just like the discourse has been kicking off, and people, it seems like every week there's like a new like long post on our vaporwave that somebody brings up on Twitter, and so like there were two pretty recent ones. One was about Vaporwave's connection to Nietzsche. It was something about how like Nietzsche says that God is dead, and Vaporwave says that history is dead, which, you know, I mean, I don't really care about the, like, exactly what that means. I think that's sort of a warmed-over Mark Fisher idea.
Yes, it is. It is,
yeah,
absolutely.
That's what he was saying. But, and then the other one is that, like, why does everybody keep saying Vaporwave's anti-capitalist? It's obviously pro-capitalist, you know?
Pro-capitalist. Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. You can argue about those two things. That's not that interesting to me. I guess it is actually interesting to me. But
yeah, you should back down from our positions. We have hard-line positions. Vaporwave is anti-capitalist.
That's true. We've said that a bunch of times.
We can't walk that back now.
Yeah. Vaporwave is anti-capitalist.
Yes.
But the main thing that I want to talk about with this is that it spurs this general resentment on Twitter to analysis of Vaporwave. And the general aversion to any sort of Vaporwave Twitter until you get people saying that the more you analyze Vaporwave, the less you actually understand it. And I do not agree with that at all. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's silly. Yes. I think it's really bizarre to me that for somebody so bent on like not discussing what they actually find interesting about this genre of music, how did they even like end up listening to it? Like, what drew you to this most, like the most esoteric, weird form of music? You know, like how did these people even get here? And why do they not want to talk about it at all? Are they embarrassed? Like, what's going on?
So I posted in the SlimeWire Discord chat, which everybody should go and join that.
Yes, go join SlimeWire Discord. Big things happening. You can DM me for an invite.
Yes, big things going down. A lot of discourse happening. It's a beautiful place. And I posted that it is wild to me that the Vaporwave fan is the only music fan who not only doesn't think of the music that he likes as being having any kind of deeper meaning to it, but actually like opposes the idea of anybody thinking gets angry, gets irate when somebody suggests that there might be some meaning to the music and insist...
Some anti-capitalist meaning or some pro-capitalist meaning.
Yeah, a Nietzschean, I don't know, somebody was talking about Guy Debord on that Discord like it's cool, you know?
Yeah. It's fun to talk about these things.
Yes. The idea that you have to say, no, it's just garbage, it's just shit that I just consume, that makes me feel good and makes me imagine a time when I was a teenager in the 80s and 90s.
Somebody said it was about sensuality, like it's some sort of sexy music genre. I don't understand. That doesn't make sense at all. Like, vaporwave is disconcerting and eerie and creepy. You don't want to have sex to vaporwave.
I think that, well, probably sensuality means just, like, sensuous, like, more concerned with feeling rather than thought. But any art form is going to invite the thinking about it. The earliest plays, ancient Greek plays, nobody thought of it as being high art, but thousands of pages and, you know, gallons of ink have been spilled analyzing those works as the highest possible art. And they are not that way because the creators meant for them to be the most amazing pieces of art that would be hallowed down the ages, but because they, despite themselves, they say something about the human condition. And so any art, even, it doesn't matter the intentionality of the artist that made it, and I'm not trying to do, like, I don't know, there's an argument that is about, like, okay, well, it doesn't matter the intention of the person who made it, what matters is the interpretation of the person who consumes the art. That's not what I'm trying to say here, but what I am trying to say is that any art reflects a historical moment, which, even though that historical moment might be insignificant, and the art might not be deep in comparison to other pieces of art, since it reflects a historical moment, it reflects a person's consciousness at a certain time in history, it is open to being discussed and analyzed, and it can say things about the world that it was made in. So any art can do that. Vaporwave in particular has a lot to say about a lot of stuff. I think that the Mark Fisher Ghosts of My Life interpretation is a really good interpretation. That specific post that was talking about, like, blah blah the end of history and blah blah Nietzsche blah blah, a lot of that's true, and I agree with that. I think that part of the cool thing about early vaporwave is that whether it was intentional or not, it was music that was created as this kind of, like, dark side of nostalgia and remembering old things, and it was, you know, the point of it was to kind of despair at that, and it was being made at the exact time when mainstream art was totally consumed by just repackaging nostalgia for mainstream audiences. And I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, but I think that vaporwave being a critique of nostalgia is a good take, and I stand by it.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be kind of silly, I don't know. I feel like it is kind of an obvious thing to say, or, you know, it's a there are two dots that can be drawn there, or a line.
Yeah, I think it's like that take, also like the anti-capitalist take, whatever. I think it's, like, very clear and very obvious. That's, like, even if you want to say that the artist, that's not the intention of the artist, it's very clear and very obvious that that was the intention of some of them, you know.
Yeah.
If you look at the albums, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't understand the general aversion to anybody discussing it, and I wonder what the motive is in general. And I wonder if, like, this whole, you can't make sample-free vaporwave anymore, like, if that sort of, like, got people worried that their music wasn't going to be considered vaporwave or something, and they felt the need to speak up, or what have you. Or if it's sort of like people feeling like maybe all of this is changing, vaporwave's having an identity crisis, they want everybody to know that they're on the right side of vaporwave history, and that, you know, these other people that are talking about it and saying that these artists are lame, they're on the wrong side of vaporwave history. I don't know.
I think that the average poster on Twitter that says vaporwave is just vibes, man, and it's not that deep, dude, just chill with the vibes and drink an Arizona iced tea. The impetus behind that is that they don't want to risk having an opinion on it and then having that opinion be a total pseudo-intellectual opinion.
They don't want to risk being dunked on.
Yeah. And they don't want to do that like we do here on this show every day. So they're cowards, And I would say I don't blame anybody for that. And the thing is that you can enjoy all of this without finding any deeper meaning in it. People that do want to talk about it, it does not pose any threat to your uncritical enjoyment of vaporwave whatsoever. Fact that you think it does is, I think, more about your own insecurity than whether the music is that deep or not. And I would say that just in general, talking about art and talking about vaporwave particularly, there's gonna be, in the same way that, like, maybe you and I have said before that maybe 75% of vaporwave is trash, but you need to wade through.
Yeah, you gotta wade through the muck.
Yeah, you gotta
wade. Sometimes the trash, like, sometimes you find something that is trash, and then, like, 2 years later you rediscover it, and it's actually stupid fire.
Yeah, and I would say that vaporwave discourse is like that too. 95% of it is going to be pure garbage and pseudo bullshit. But you have to keep on making the high school level stoned basement level takes, because occasionally you're going to find a gem in there, and that makes it all worth it. And that's the hard, thankless task of this podcast that we do every day. You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, so this this is a good transition into the next topic, which is saving vaporwave. Saving vaporwave is, you know, it's the thing that it came about after all of this vaporwave discourse and this general aversion to it. And I think it really started to take shape when we realized that there are, like, other people that also, like, want to talk about this shit. And then we, like, you know, we obviously start the Discord server. There's obviously people in there talking about it. People have asked me, like, what is the Saving Vaporwave Manifesto come out? What is Saving Vaporwave? Saving Vaporwave is not making vaporwave. Not just making vaporwave. It's not taking the scene away from 100% electronica. It is, to me, simply like an ignition point of vaporwave discourse. And it's fun to say it because people get really mad when you say it. But the whole point is that the people that get mad at it are the people that we need to save vaporwave for. We need to save it for them so that they can enjoy it again. Because I'm not sure these people are really enjoying it. Like, I don't know. I think that, like, when Vaporwave originally came out, people were enjoying it because they were talking about it, and they were going, like, whoa, this is so cool. I can, like, think about it a lot. There's a lot of things here to think about. And yeah. Then I think that the way that people are just consuming it now, they say that they're, like, enjoying it more than ever, but I really don't think that's true. And I think a lot of people are just filling up their Bandcamp collections and filling up their vinyl record collections. And in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, they're going to, like, be bored of all this stuff. And it's not going to be interesting.
Like,
Yeah, they're consuming it in, like, the way that you would a normal music genre. And Vaporwave is not a normal music genre, you know.
It's an exceptional music genre. And, yeah, you can't...
It's the end of music. You can't make anything new from it. That's where, I mean, you know, hard vapor, dream punk, all these offshoots, all those things ultimately failed, and it always came back to Vaporwave. Because Vaporwave is the end. It's the natural conclusion. It's where you steal other people's music and call it your own, you know. You can't do anything more after that. So, that's not what saving Vaporwave is. Saving Vaporwave is about pissing people off by saying that you're saving Vaporwave.
Yes, so I'm curious, because you are the launcher of the slogan Save Vaporwave. What would a saved Vaporwave look like? I'm sorry, I gotta pee really bad. I really gotta go. So
okay, good.
Please chew on that for a minute, and I gotta use the restroom. Right back.
Saved Vaporwave. So saving Vaporwave is about bringing the discussion back. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
It's about bringing the discussion back. It's about bringing Vaporwave to a place where there can be different camps that aren't, like, at eternal odds with each other. It, you know, so, like, Vaporwave, like, during the, like, subreddit days when the subreddit was the main place of a community and discussion, there were people that had different viewpoints on Vaporwave and how they wanted the scene to go, and they would talk about them, and there wasn't, like, it wasn't like one massive camp of worship of, like, these certain acts versus, like, a small fringe class of, like, dissidents, you know.
Yeah.
It was, like, pretty equal. And what's happening now is there's a giant master, you know, race. Master race of, of people that worship, Vaporwave nostalgia, and then there's a small fringe group of dissidents that, you know, want to talk about Vaporwave and, like, think those artists are kind of lame. So the idea is a saved Vaporwave would be just more differing opinions, more people feeling like they can actually say those opinions and talk about Vaporwave without fear of being ostracized from the scene because they didn't like, you know, the newest Death's Dynamic Shroud album.
True.
I love the newest Death's Dynamic Shroud album. I saw a lot of people that were really dogpiling on people that didn't like it. People should be allowed to not like it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, that's just a...
I'm also making this all up as I go. Saving Vaporwave is mostly a joke.
Yeah, well, I think what Saving Vaporwave really is to me is that it's basically just Vaporwave except with the aesthetic of, like, 80s, like, Congo soldiers.
Yeah, it's mostly Vaporwave with, like, World War II soldier aesthetic.
Yeah.
Any sort of military aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah. Big
Forrest Gump in the Vietnam War.
Yeah, yeah. Big muscular guys with berets, with guns, and, like, I think Brotherhood is a good
Brotherhood, theme. Yeah, that's a big thing for Saving Vaporwave.
Yeah, yeah. It's the brothers saving themselves, saving each other on the battlefield, and, like, doing rolls and, like, backflips. I think that's a very important part of Save Vaporwave to me, is that aesthetic. And I think just kind of a benighted and persecuted theme of persecution is a cool theme to have in your music and in your aesthetic, so I'm into that.
Definitely.
That's kind of what I that's kind of what I think of when I think of Save Vaporwave. And the idea that we're amassing an army.
Yes, we're amassing an army. We're bringing back we're bringing people into the fold that have been out of the fold for a long time. You don't know what we're up to yet, but just believe me, it's going to be big. It's going to be crazy. We're stealing it. We're stealing the scene back.
We're taking it back, baby.
We're taking it back. But yeah, that's Save Vaporwave. The last thing that I wanted to end this show on is a wonderful a glory of sued Vaporwave opinions. And it was because somebody on Twitter made fun of people saying that Vaporwave is dead. And then I quote tweeted it with the Grand Inquisitor, which is the Grand Inquisitor, the poem that is in The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky. I didn't really think about it that much, and then I realized there is a very beautiful parable. Parable. Is that how you say it?
Parable?
Parable.
Yeah.
Parable.
Yeah.
That can be found in The Grand Inquisitor. So The Grand Inquisitor is a poem that is recited in The Brothers Karamazov by Ivan, the Nietzschean atheist philosopher brother.
Yeah.
He recites this poem to Alyosha, the monk, the Christian monk brother. And it's all about how if Christ came back, the Catholic Church would persecute him again because his values do not align with the Church anymore. Even though the Church was founded on his beliefs.
Yeah.
Right? So, if you look at the origins of Vaporwave, Vaporwave was constantly derided. Nobody took it seriously. Anthony Fantano, you know, he reviewed Floral Shop and he said, this is bullshit. Vectroid isn't adequately transforming the samples. This isn't music. This isn't art. And the job of Vaporwave at that time was to tell people, this is actually art. And this is the better art than you're making. Because we are stealing samples.
Yes.
But as Vaporwave grew, its values disaligned with its original creators. And then Vaporwave, the Vaporwave Christ came back in the form of pizza. PZA.
Yeah.
He Vaporwave artists themselves in, you know, it was Christ coming back.
Yeah.
And then the Vaporwave Church symbolically crucified him again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
So there you have it. The way we save Vaporwave is we bring back pizza. And I'm going to invite him into the Discord server. I need to speak to him.
Yeah, we have some very important messages for him.
But yeah, well,
That's a beautiful image. And I think that it's very evocative, and it's very good, and I think that's a good way to end the podcast.
Yes, it's very sued too, which
yes,
you know,
which has
that's
been
what
a running
this is
theme
all
here.
About. The yes. running theme is sued posting about Vaporwave.
Sued posting. All right. Well, signing off. This is EK Man Sensei.
Oh, do you want to say anything about the Lil Yachty Poland song?
Oh, I don't. No, I don't care that much about it. It was good. I liked it a lot.
It was pretty good. We were going to do a culture portion segment about it.
Yeah.
You wanted to, and I said we weren't going to do it. And then now I'm bringing it back. It's pretty good.
You're saving the culture section.
Well, we're not going to do... We're just going to say it's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's in the intro. Yeah.
It's really good. You should listen to it. Yeah. Best thing by Lil Yachty in a long time.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Probably best cloud rap. Best mumble rap.
It is sort of a cloud rap song, now that I think about it.
Yeah. Well, with that, we bid you adieu, our humble, loyal listeners.
Yeah, sayonara.
Sayonara. What up?